Blog Talk Radio.
All right, welcome to the Today's You podcast. Great time of year for college sports. We had the Final Four finishing up this past weekend. But first, we're going to get to some spring football previews. Today's You and Tyler Waddell was at the Michigan spring game, had some pretty interesting takeaways from there. This weekend, Kyle Kensing will be at USC. Let's bring on our callers for college football. We have Stephen Sheehan, Dustin Schutte, and Alex Kolodzic. How are you guys doing today?
We're doing great, Colin.
Doing pretty well. Sorry for the little bit of a delay there. I know we don't have too much time to go over college football before we get into some of the Final Four talk, but wanted to touch base on some USC stuff. I know, Dustin, we've talked about USC a couple times on these podcasts recently with their big spring game coming up. In your mind, what's the biggest storyline that you're going to be watching for USC and that you're going to be trying to take away from that spring game in L.A. this weekend?
Well, you know, I guess it's going to be how their young recruiting class, if they're going to be an impact right away. Sorry, I'm getting a little feedback in my ear. It's hard for me to think. I think it's going to be important to see how their young recruiting class plays a factor, if they're going to play a factor coming into this 2015 season with such high expectations, if they're on the field, how effective they'll be on the field, and, you know, just what to look for out of Cody Kessler, if he's going to be the kind of quarterback we expect him to be moving into the 2015 season and the kind of quarterback USC needs him to be in order for them to be successful.
Yeah, I definitely think Cody Kessler seems like a lot of people are pointing to him as someone who should get more recognition this year, especially if USC is able to break into the top five. A lot of people have them in their top five starting out the year. Alex, I know you had a top five almost immediately after the college football season. Do you think USC is in a lot of people's minds this offseason because they're coming off the sanctions and because they have such that name brand recognition, or is this legitimately a team that's going to be in the top four or five all season long to you?
Well, I don't think that the public's necessarily buying into them right now, Colin, but I think that they definitely should be. And I think that they have 100% chance at vying for a playoff bid right now. And the first thing, if you look at the Vegas sports book, they're hinting at it pretty well right now. USC currently fifth best odds right now to title at plus 1400. With only Alabama, TCU, Ohio State, and Clemson ahead of them. So right there, it should speak volumes for a team that actually missed out on a conference championship a year ago. So like Dustin said, I think this one mainly stems from Cody Kessler. I think you look at the conference right now as a whole, he should have that, given Hundley and Taylor Kelly and Mariota will all enter the draft. But I think what's going to come down for USC is when they play on the road, and they're going to get a pretty good test in South Bend in the middle pack of the year. They get a lot of good Pac-12 opponents at home: Arizona, Stanford, Utah, Washington, UCLA. Those will all be in the Coliseum. But then you've got a matchup in Austin Stadium to end the year. So if this team can muster up a few wins on the road and stay composed, I think that if there is going to be somebody coming out of the Pac-12, then you have to almost give the nod to USC right now.
Yeah, I think it'll be a close race all season between Oregon and USC. As a USC fan, I'd love to see the Trojans back there because they really haven't been for a few seasons now under the sanctions. Steven, one of the top players that will probably come off the board almost immediately at the NFL draft will be Leonard Williams. How do you see USC trying to replace him? I know it's almost impossible to replace a talent like that, but what moves do you think they'll make to try and fill that void?
Well, like you said, it's pretty much impossible to replace a guy that's probably going to go in the top three. At worst, I'd say he's probably a top five pick. You know, they have some guys on the roster who are experienced, who have, you know, a pretty nice pedigree. A guy like Antoine Woods, who was highly decorated coming out of high school, returning for that final year. I believe he's a redshirt senior. Played pretty well at nose tackle. I think they're going to have to manufacture it with a bunch of different guys, though, because it's just too tough to replace a dynamic talent like Leonard Williams, who, interestingly, for people who are following his draft journey, actually played rugby in Daytona Beach, which is in Florida around my area. It's kind of a little interesting backstory about him that just kind of shows Leonard Williams' overall athleticism and just his ability to do so many different things, translating from the rugby pitch to the football field. And I think on Sundays he's going to make a big impact for USC. It's going to be have to be a combination of guys, because there's just no one they have that has that dynamic athletic talent to replace Leonard Williams one for one.
Yeah, you just look at him and seeing some of the stuff he did at the combine, and you know he's an athlete. I mean, he's a big guy, but he's not just a big guy throwing a bunch of weight around. He is one of the best athletes that USC has had in a while, and that's saying something. We talked about today, Alex, you had an article on Washington staying in the Pac-12. Washington, one of those teams out west that looks like they're going to be improved in Chris Peterson's second year. Definitely a program heading in the right direction, but you made the point that they have a very daunting schedule. Do you think that it's a disappointment this year if they don't improve on the record last year, or can they have a similar season record-wise and feel like they're still improving, given that they have one of, if not the toughest schedule in the nation this year?
Yeah, it'll be a plus if they can, maintain that record that they did last year. They are moving in the right direction, I think, and they're slowly creeping up, and they're getting to the cream of the crop. It won't be next year, but in a few years, I think Washington can possibly join, you know, the Oregons and the Arizonas like that. But you look at the first half of their schedule, you'll usually have these teams, you know, they're chalking their schedule up with some pretty petty non-conference opponents. But, you know, they're not going to face, you know, these teams from Division II or, you know, the OVC. They're going to get Boise State and Utah State. And you look at last year, the success that Mountain West had against first Pac-12, Nevada ousting Washington State early in the year, and then Boise State pretty much handling Arizona in the bowl game. And then, like we mentioned with Shaq Thompson, you know, if this is a school like Bama or LSU or even, you know, a Michigan State or Wisconsin, where pretty much say, okay, you know, next guy up, but you place somebody that's even somewhat efficient. But you can't do that at a school like Washington. They're not going to produce enough defensive recruits that are elite like that. So while next year does look a bit daunting for Washington, I still believe in the right direction. But don't be surprised to see them take a step back next year with their schedule.
Yeah, we sort of saw the blueprint this year, I guess the pinnacle of it, in terms of grabbing a coach that was very successful. One of the smaller group of five conferences with Urban Meyer clearly at Utah and Florida and Ohio State. Dustin, do you think that Chris Peterson is a guy who's going to have that type of success, whether it's at Washington or maybe going to a bigger program after that? It just seems like he was able to do incredible things and really establish the best group of five program out there at Boise State. Is he sort of the next guy that could become this great Power Five conference coach?
I think he has the potential, but I think what we have to remember in situations like this is Brady Hoke, you know, he did a great job at Ball State and then at San Diego State, and he gets to Michigan, and he just runs the program almost into the ground, and now Jim Harbaugh's got to bring his way back up. There are some coaches out there that are just better suited in a non-Power 5 conference league or coaching that type of team. Now, that's not to say Chris Peterson won't have that type of success, but the Pac-12 with the daunting teams like the USC's, the up-and-coming Arizona's, the Oregon's, you know, it's a tough league out there, and it's a tough league to win. He was able to win out there, you know, with Boise State. He was able to win against just about any team he played, whether it was a Power 5 conference team or not. So I think the potential's there, but it's too early in his career to really tell. Certainly he's got Washington headed in the right direction, and sometimes, you know, in those early stages, it's easy to fall in love or go through the honeymoon stage of having this new head coach, getting some of the better recruits. But we'll see, I think, over the next 4 or 5 years if he's up to the task. I think he has the capability to win, but sometimes winning at a smaller school when you only play 1 or 2 big games a year, it's just not as easy when you're playing, you know, when you're playing teams like Oregon, when you're playing Arizona, when you're playing USC and UCLA, week in, week out, that takes a toll. And sometimes those coaches just can't acclimate to that as quickly as we'd like to see.
Yeah, it'll definitely be interesting with some of these new coaches at different programs. Also, some of the guys who stayed put and didn't leave when it seemed like they could have. A guy I'm thinking of is Hugh Freeze, and I think Ole Miss was really smart to sort of lock him down, give him an extension, doing great things at Ole Miss. Steven, you were talking today on Today's You had an article about the areas Ole Miss needs to improve in order to reach that sort of elite status in the SEC. It seemed like they were there for most of this past season, and then they kind of tailed off at the end. Is Ole Miss a program that is going to reach that elite status in the SEC, or is this more of kind of a fluke season, if you will, and they're going to come back down to earth for the next few years?
No, I think Coach Hugh Freeze is doing a lot of good things there, and although they did kind of have a fluke in terms of games, if you look at Hugh Freeze's 3-year tenure there, they've won one more game every year. They've gone from 7 to 8 to 9 wins. Not saying necessarily next year they jump to 10 and then, you know, more so in the next coming years, but I think he's built a good program. More importantly, they've been able to bring in some really highly rated recruits over guys, you know, when they're facing a lot of competition from Nick Saban and from Alabama and such. You know, I think the real strength of this team next year, and the reason I think they have a definite chance to compete for the SEC West, they have Laquan Treadwell, Laramie Tunsil, Robert Kendiche. Those are 3 stud former recruits that are right on the cusp of becoming superstars in the SEC. Problem being, 2 of those 3 guys suffered major injuries at the end of the year. They're going to have to prove that they're healthy, but both Treadwell and Tunsil are guys that have first-round caliber skills. Obviously, we know Robert Kendiche, former #1 overall recruit. You want to see him take that next step forward. But overall, I think Hugh Freeze is doing a lot of great things, bringing in top-notch recruits, and I think Ole Miss is here to stay. I don't think they're a fluke at all.
Yeah, we'll definitely be keeping an eye on those SEC spring games. Most of them are those last 2 weekends in April, and Stays You do our best to be there and to get plenty of coverage of as many of those games as we can. As I said, we'll be at USC this weekend, so keep an eye out on Today's You for that coverage. Also, give these guys a follow on Twitter and read all their stuff on Today's You. You can find Steven at Steven P. Sheehan, Alex at AlexK_47, and Dustin at Sharp_Shooter. That's SCHUTTER. Thank you guys for the spring update. We're going to have a lot more coverage in the coming month for all these games. Appreciate it, and have a good one.
Thanks a lot, Colin.
Thanks, Colin.
All right, let's switch over to some college basketball. Plenty to talk about there with the Final Four this past weekend. We know that Kentucky lost. That was the biggest storyline going into it. But you also had a great title game, Coach K getting his 5th national title. Let's bring our college basketball experts on, Bobby Reagan and Andrew Beverly. Hey, guys, how's it going?
Hey, guys.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing pretty well. All right, so we'll jump right into the title game. It was one of the better title games I've seen in the last few years, and there's a lot of games that can contend with that. Bev, to you, when Duke was coming back in the last second half of the second half, they were down by 9 points. What started that rally for you? What change was it that made it a 9-point lead for Wisconsin turn into a win for Duke?
Well, I think Bobby's going to agree with me here. Pretty much when Wisconsin stopped playing offense like they play offense, things just kind of, you know, stopped. I mean, I can't really think of another way to put it. And then, you know, when a couple calls went Duke's way, that also really, really swung the momentum. I don't think it was necessarily why Wisconsin lost the game, those calls, but I think it definitely had a strong impact on the game. It's kind of in short. That's kind of what I think. And, you know, Tyus Jones being absolutely unbelievable.
Yeah, he was pretty close down the stretch. This tournament especially, and I think it's sort of a default reason a lot of times that teams go away from their offense, but if you watch the games, it's hard to get around that offenses changed the way they approached it and lost a lot of games, especially in this tournament. You saw with Notre Dame against Kentucky mm-hmm. against Wisconsin, and then Wisconsin against Duke. Bobby, do you think this is an issue that coaches are going to start addressing even more this offseason in terms of not slowing the game down and really just to continue attacking? Or is it one of those tried and true things that normally works and just didn't work in pressure situations this tournament?
Yeah, I don't think you'll see much of a change. I kind of disagree. I don't think Wisconsin kind of went away from their offense. Their offense has always been slower. It was more what Duke did than what Wisconsin didn't do.
Yeah.
To me, it was Emile Jefferson and Grayson Allen. Jefferson completely shut down Kaminsky. Allen got the run going on the offensive side, obviously, with his own 8-0 run. But, yeah, I mean, you won't see coaches change too much. There's really not much they can do either because it's still the kids playing the game.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to blame the X's and O's, especially those pressure situations where it's really just whoever makes a play. Perhaps
Wisconsin
had the most
pressure
on them. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, yeah, I mean, and Wisconsin didn't do that, and I do agree with Bobby. I mean, Emile Jefferson was a difference maker, and I was personally offended when nobody was asking him questions in the post-game press conference. And Coach K had to bring it up in order for him to get asked the question. But, yeah, I mean, he was amazing. And Grayson Allen, who nobody knew about before, even though he's phenomenal and is McDonald's All-American, he was obviously a difference maker as well because he played unlike as the entire year. Except against Wake Forest, of course, when he scored 27. But that's beside the point.
But yeah, you're not bitter about that at all.
No, not at all.
I think it's safe to say the team that had the most pressure all season long, really, especially in the tournament, was Kentucky. Bobby, I know you've been pulling for them all season long and really know that team better than anybody. What do you think it was ultimately that got to Kentucky and prevented them from beating Wisconsin and completing that perfect season?
An off night? I mean, that's the beauty and the worst thing about the NCAA tournament being a one game elimination. Wisconsin is a tough matchup for Kentucky, but I mean, you saw the difference. That wasn't the Kentucky team you've seen all year, and that wasn't the Wisconsin team you've seen all year. You know, we kind of talked about it. The three of us kind of talked about it Monday night. If Wisconsin played the way they did in the title game against Kentucky, that's a 20-point win for Kentucky.
Right.
So it's an off night. You know, and you can't even say it was necessarily shooting because they shot 3-for-5 from three. You know, they didn't put up a ton, which is kind of abnormal. Missed one free throw, but there was a stretch where they were taking some long twos. Again, I don't think it was the pressure or anything like that. It's just it's a one game event, and you saw a team that matched up well with them play well.
Yeah, I mean, it seemed like it was the perfect storm where, like you said, Wisconsin had a great game. Kentucky had an off game. And kind of like John Calipari said, it was the one time in a few years that Kentucky hasn't executed down the stretch.
That was Wisconsin's championship. I mean, Wisconsin won their championship Saturday night. Duke won theirs on Monday.
Right. Mm-hmm. To you, Bobby, and we'll get your take on this too, Bev, in just a second. But to you, Bobby, being a fan, what is Kentucky's legacy, this team? What is their legacy in college basketball after this season based on having that perfect record right until the Final Four but losing it and not getting the championship?
they are one of the two best teams of, I would say, post-2000, along with the 2012 UK team. Not far behind would be the Illinois and UNC type teams, but I mean, they are on talent or on paper probably the most talented team we've seen in the modern era, especially depth wise. So I think that's your like team. If you look at numbers, KenPom has them as the best team since he's had his numbers since 2002, which I think is kind of the best rating out there is the KenPom rating. So, I mean, yeah, their legacy, it's going to be, you know, people look at it as an incredible season. Most Kentucky fans will look at it as an incredible season. But ultimately, you know, they'll get talked more about not winning the championship than being 38 now.
Right, right. Bev, as a non-Kentucky fan and even really more of an ACC fan over the SEC, mm-hmm. do you still put Kentucky up there as this team, one of the best teams of all time, or do you have to have the championship in order to be in that discussion?
Yeah, I mean, it's you can look at it a couple of different ways. I mean, do I think they're one of the teams that I've seen? Yeah, I mean, without a doubt. But in terms of legacy, I mean, you got to put them up there. I mean, you got to put them on here with those teams like, you know, the UNLV team that was upset by Duke, and the Houston team that was upset at NC State. I mean, I would put them on the same level as that. I think they'll definitely be remembered for good reasons and bad, because I think, I mean, it's a disappointment that they didn't win. But at the same time, I mean, 38-1 is ridiculous. I mean, they were a great team, an extremely talented team. I don't know if I would say they're the best team since 2000. I think the back-to-back Florida team has something to say about that. Al Horford and Joakim Noah and the greatest player of all time, Dorian Green. Yeah, I mean, I think they're a great team. I mean, I don't think you can call them. In order to be in the best ever conversation, you have to get a championship. And
see, I think that's only true in a series where it's a one game. It's a little different, you know. If this is the NBA and Wisconsin beat them 4-2, then it gets wiped out a little bit. But where it can be one night, you know. I mean, last year we saw. Are we really saying UConn was the best team from last year? I think you'd be kind of lose. They're the best team for six games. So that's why I don't put so much emphasis on the championship. Yeah, it's important, but when you're talking about teams, I think the best comparison for this UK team, which no one, everyone kind of just talks about the 91 UNLV team, which makes sense, it's the Fab Five. They're going to have the same type of legacy as the Fab Five because they're the first to kind of be this super team, if you want to call it that, or true super team. And I think you'll see more of it in the future of guys sitting there coming back for a year or joining together and saying, hey, let's you know, not play 38 minutes, let's play 28 minutes together and see if we can go on the season.
Yeah, I definitely think there will be more of that in the future. What I can't wait for is when you have two quote-unquote super teams in one season, you know, be it Kentucky and maybe somebody else, perhaps a Duke if they continue to call in these one and done. Looking ahead to the offseason, I guess, moving forward after this great season, Bobby, you had a really interesting article today talking about the things that need to change in college basketball. And a couple of them were the ways the game is officiated. And it really did seem like a sore spot this tournament. Again, it's something that sort of a lot of times when a team loses, the fans will say, oh, the officiating, but it was really bad both ways in a lot of these games. And I think just about anybody would say that. Do you think anything needs to be done, Bobby, in terms of adjusting the officiating or ways that it can improve just over this offseason that we could see change by next year?
They just need to get full-time officials. That's actually probably what I missed the most in my article. You know, these guys aren't, quote, full-time officials. You know, they have other jobs. What is it, Gene Territore refs the NFL and also refs college basketball. How someone does that is beyond me. But they kind of need that so they understand the game a little bit better because, you know, and Jay Billis makes great points all the time when he's sitting there going, half the time these refs just can't keep up with the game, let alone make the right call. And that's what you see a lot. I mean, there's going to be missed calls in every game. That's just part of basketball. But what we saw was just some egregious missed calls. So I think that they just need to kind of just almost take classes during the offseason and have simulations. It's more stuff like that than actually anything in-game they can do to improve the officiating.
Yeah, I agree that it would be great if there was a way to have full-time officials and where that's a full-time job. I always take pity or relate to the officials because I grew up with today, you know, I had an 80-hour week job and then officiated these games that millions of people were watching on the weekend. These guys are able to live and breathe that profession if you can, you know, it's not their, for a lot of them, their full-time thing. So I can definitely see some changes there. Another one that seemed to get touched on a lot this year, even before the tournament, was I guess you could call it pace of play. That's what baseball has sort of labeled it. And we're starting to see those changes and improvements in baseball. But basketball is also looking at the 30-second shot clock. Also, there's so many times out. The game goes so slowly. Bev, would you adjust anything immediately in terms of the pace of the play for next year?
Oh, yeah. I mean, honestly, I think it should be a 24-second shot clock. A lot of people disagree with that. But, I mean, I think that the pace of play in the NBA is much better. I think any change that the college game can make to be more like the NBA, I think they need to have jump balls because the possession era is idiotic. It makes no sense. I think a 24-second shot clock should be used. I think they should change the rule to being able to advance the ball past half court on timeout situations in the final, you know, minute, 2 minutes of the game. I mean, the NBA is so far ahead of the college game in terms of, you know, officiating. I mean, there's some bad officials in the NBA, but, I mean, like, nothing even close to as bad as – I mean, this NCAA tournament was awful in terms of – it wasn't just, like, bad. It was terrible. I mean, there were games decided – you could argue there were games decided by officiating or at least strongly influenced by officiating. And I kind of rambled on there. But,
well, I think the overarching thing is that a lot of these do seem like fairly simple adjustments.
Yeah.
I'm not saying all that can be done in one off season, but we saw with the NIT this year, the shot clock changed to 30 seconds. I've watched a good number of those games, and it really didn't seem like it changed the game that much. But it was a shorter game. It was a faster-moving game, and I thought it was more entertaining. And if it can work in the NIT and those game in meaningful games, seems like it could work pretty well for the NCAA as well.
If the women's game has a 30-second shot clock, why doesn't the men's game have a 30-second shot clock? I mean,
The women's game also doesn't have a 10-second violation. Are we going to get rid of that?
Yeah, that's a good point.
well Bobby, you were saying that.
I mean, I don't think one has a bearing necessarily on the other, but, I mean, no, I think not having a 10-second violation is idiotic because it negates
the entire purpose of having a press. Women's basketball.
What?
I'm just saying we shouldn't compare anything to women's basketball.
Well, I mean, I guess is that people have been talking about shortening the shot clock for so long, and the women's game has done it, yet the men's game, for the most part, refuses to do it. And, I mean, 35 seconds is too long. I mean, I mean, one of the two teams I follow a lot plays slower pace, and I mean UVA plays a very, very slow pace and uses the whole shot clock. Like it would maybe hurt their team a little bit if the shot clock was shortened. But I mean, it just needs to happen. It would make the games more fun. It would beat things up, and honestly, it would make the coaches have to adjust and be better at their job. And I don't know.
Yeah, it seems like it would be catching up men's basketball, college basketball a little bit to whether it's the NBA or women's basketball. You even had Gino Auriemma saying last week that men's basketball is way behind the women's game.
Which is the biggest
take that
joke.
As,
I hate Gino Auriemma.
Oh, geez. Maybe we shouldn't get into this.
Yeah. So don't get me started on Gino Auriemma.
All right. How about this?
He's been known
said?
To be a little outspoken. But
well, Bobby, I know one of the things you had a great bit of disdain for this season was the Virginia Cavaliers had them ranked pretty low all season long. We won't get into the top 25 yet. Yeah. I'm guessing they're not in your preseason top 25 for next year. If you had
no,
to right now, and clearly
they won't be higher than 9.
Well, I meant your preseason top 5. Sorry, top 5.
Top 5? No, they will not be my preseason top 5.
There's a lot that's going to change.
I was just saying, we all agree that it's pretty asinine to try to how people now try to jump the shark with these early top 25 a day after the championship game.
It's
yes,
fun though.
It is.
It's stupid,
fun.
But it's fun, and it gets the people going.
It's all just a talking point.
It's provocative.
Yeah.
So,
exactly.
So I think especially in college basketball, it's even more ridiculous because there's fewer players and so many more leave early as opposed to college football.
Right.
College football is a little bit easier to keep track of. That being said, we're still going to do it because it gets the people going. So
exactly.
Bobby, if you had to pick a top 5 or even a 5 teams that, you know, people should be keeping an eye on the most, what are your top 5 teams heading into next season?
And this is in no particular order, because if it was, hey, Kentucky's going to have about 19 scholarship players next year since no one's going to the draft as of right now. But Kentucky's still going to be good. They're still going to be probably a top 5 team. Iowa State returns everybody. I know they kind of – there's a lot of bitter taste in a lot of people's mouths the way they sell this NCAA tournament, but they return everybody. They're going to be a good team. Maryland is going to be interesting. I think they could sneak – but you'll see them in a lot of preseason top 5. They're definitely not someone to keep an eye on. North Carolina returns everybody. They'll be a popular pick for the title next year. And then I think you still got to look out west at Arizona. They always just kind of seem to sneak around that number 5 team. So I would say those are kind of my 5 to keep an eye on.
All right. I like those picks. Arizona, I think actually, a lot of people have dropping a bit, but I, you know, Sean Miller is going to have another great team. He does it just about every year now. Bev, any team you think Bobby missed? That you think could be in the top 5 to start the year?
To start the year, no. But I'm going to throw a team out there. I'll give you, like, my rankings in a minute. But I'm going to throw a team out there that I think could be there. And y'all are going to just say it's absolutely ridiculous and I'm saying it. But I feel like Indiana could potentially be a top 5 team because I think Thonmaker is going to go to Indiana.
I don't
I'm
think that's ridiculous.
Thon
at
Maker.
All. I could definitely.
It
see
is
them.
Ridiculous because they still have Tom Crean as the head coach.
Hey,
which
man,
I have said all season long, I think is a good thing for that program. I will be a Tom Crean supporter. You know,
yeah.
Till the day
Tom
I die.
Crean
I
is not that awful. He's not great. But I don't think he's as bad as everybody thinks he is.
He's pretty bad.
Like,
I mean, every every Kentucky fan I know wants Indiana to keep Tom Crean as their head coach just because he's so bad.
I'm telling you, next year, Indiana with Tom Crean, they're going to be good next year.
If they have, if Indiana has a front court of Thomas Bryant and Thon Maker, if Thon Maker decides to go there, I don't care if my dog coaches that team. That team will be a top 15 team. Like, that team will be ridiculous if those, like, if Thon Maker goes there. But
all right, fair enough. So who do you have in your top five, Bev?
Okay, I actually think North Carolina should probably be ranked number one preseason because they're losing absolutely no one from a team who's really, really talented. And they still have a decent shot at landing either Brandon Ingram or Jaylen Brown. Even though I think Jaylen Brown is either going to end up at Kentucky or Cal. I still think there's a significant chance he goes to Carolina. And even without him, if they pull in another big-time recruit, I think they have to be number one preseason because they bring everybody back. And that team is already good.
Yeah, yeah.
And then at number two, Bobby's going to disagree. I got to put Virginia is number two because they bring everybody back.
I hope everyone puts them at number one. That's my dream, is everyone puts Virginia at number one.
I mean, I don't think, as a Virginia fan, I think it would be ridiculous to put them at number one because I think any team that lost in the round of 32 shouldn't be at number one. I mean,
but does Justin Anderson go pro?
I don't think so. I think he comes back. I don't know. I mean, he's, you know, the thing about Justin Anderson is that the only people who have hinted at Justin Anderson going pro have been everybody except for anybody at UVA and Justin Anderson himself. Like nobody has said anything. And I also think Justin Anderson probably realized that he's not good enough to go pro yet. I mean, he's not. I mean, he's a good player. He's a great athlete. But, I mean, he has a lot to improve. So I think he comes back, especially because, I mean, the rest of the team is coming back. So I think he'll come back because of that. Like, I think had there been a lot of roster turnover, he would have left. But I think he comes back now. My other teams in there, I think Maryland should be up there. And, again, I'm not saying this stuff just because I'm an ACC fan. I really think Maryland with Melo Trimble, Jake Layman, Diamond Stone are going to be really good.
Robert Carter.
And then
Carter.
I got what?
Robert Carter, the transfer from Georgia Tech. That he's going to be on that roster too.
Oh, wow. I actually didn't know that. But, yeah, he's good.
Yeah, they'll be loaded.
Yeah, and then I got Kentucky. And I'm always hesitant to put a Big 12 team, but I got to say, like, maybe like Oklahoma or Iowa State. And maybe Wichita State, actually. I mean,
Wichita State, they could definitely start it in the top 10. I mean, seems like
No, they should not be in the top 10.
Wichita State?
Yeah.
Why not?
Remember, they lose to Keel Cotton.
They still have Van Vliet and what's his name? Justin Bieber.
Baker.
They have Van Vliet and Baker, okay, but you're telling me those two are good enough to be a top 10 team in the country? No.
No.
No, I think they'll be.
But I mean,
exactly
also, like, look at who they're going to play.
Right. But
like,
they'll be exactly what they were this year. They'll be,
this team was in, like, a Power 5 conference.
I think they'll be exactly what they are this year.
Which, I mean, they spent some time in the top 10, so who knows? Maybe they will start right in that 9-10 range again. Thanks, guys, for covering all the college basketball topics, wrapping up the Final Four, and getting us started with the offseason. You can check out Bobby and Bev multiple times a week on Today's U. Bev will be heading up our recruiting content in the off season, so get a bunch of good coverage there on Today's U. Bobby, as always, is going to be trying to change the college basketball world for the better at Today's U, and also doing plenty of off season coverage. You can find Bobby on Twitter at UKLefty22 and Bev as well at Andrew_Bev. Thanks, guys.
All right, see ya.
Thank you. See y'all.
All right, make sure to tune in this weekend for all of our USC spring football coverage, and we'll have plenty of recruiting coverage coming your way for college basketball and football as well.